Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankelberg, and Andre Kleiner has pulled up a chair next to me. And hey, Andre, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back after several weeks absence.
That's right. You were just mentioning that you had 2 weeks of travel in Europe on a vacation and then turned around and got home and went straight to Florida, which sounds like vacation to me. But you say it was business.
Well, it was business. Yeah, it was ASTR, Accelerated Stress Test and Reliability Conference. I mean, it was a nice location. It mm-hmm. was pretty close to the ocean, but that was business. Okay. Definitely.
So definitely like a conference where you're in the hotel chairs indoors most of the time.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's the way it usually goes.
That's business. Now, ASTR, I've been to one of those when it was in San Francisco years ago. But I've heard of it. It's a long running conference, and I don't know that it's really a conference. I think it's actually called a workshop.
I think they kind of alternate. It has a format of a conference, just like RAMS, but actually it's typically a one track, and it's smaller group of people. But they actually, since the topic is very specific, it's mostly around accelerated testing. It's a very focused group of people, mm-hmm. and I mean if this is something you involved in accelerated testing, I think this is a pretty good forum to attend because there will be more presentations right up to your alley.
I also liked it because it, like you said, it's more focused on that particular topic. So everybody there is interested in chatting about it. And I met some wonderful people there that and have stayed in touch with them over the years. Because it's a smaller, more intimate conference that you get to know more people, I think. Whereas RAMS is 500-600 people at times, and there's so much going on and so many events going on that it's hard to get to know other people.
Yeah, and speaking of RAMS, there's also a conference called ESREL, ESREL, which is kind of similar to RAMS, only in Europe. And this one is even bigger, and I've attended it twice, and it's really hard to find exactly what you're looking for. There's such a variety of presentations and kind of hard to focus. That's why I really liked ASTR. I've attended it for the third time, and all three times it was very good.
Okay. Well, there are certainly lots of conferences out there. The reliability calendar up at Ascendo Reliability lists as many different events and conferences and seminars and workshops and meetings and anything else we can find. So if you're listening and you're curious about what's the schedule and when these things are coming up or what's coming up that you're interested in, the calendar that we post is actually powered by a Google calendar. So if you click through, you can actually search for, accelerated testing, or you can search for location, or you can search for time of year, those kinds of things. So it's a pretty handy tool if you're looking for to get out of the rut of conferences you've been going to and looking for something different. So Andre, one of the things that you mentioned just briefly, and I think I saw it in the lineup for the ASTR, is that you were on a panel. It looked like it had an interesting question of kind of the balance. I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it talked about modeling and testing.
I was basically a featured speaker there. There was one thing I was doing. Another one, I was on the panel with Professor Bill Meeker and lady named Dr. Jerome, Elizabeth Jerome, mm-hmm. Works for the Air Force. And the topic of the panel was balancing modeling and testing, which I found very interesting. And Each of us had like a short presentation, but the whole topic I think is very important because most of us involved in testing, and at the same time we need to kind of we've done some kind of modeling, even though if it's simple model like I don't know Arrhenius or Kaufman-Manson, where you need to calculate the duration of your test using that model.
I'm sure you've run into some people though that, and I remember when I was at Hewlett-Packard, the basic premise for product development was build, test, fix. And it was very much on the Hult style of testing, is in whether it was functional testing, environmental testing, reliability testing, anything like that, was what Bill and Dave said through the 60s as they developed their and built this company, was that engineers are really good at fixing problems. So go find the problems as fast as you can. And so there was maybe some modeling there, saying well, here's what we expect to happen. But there was very little emphasis on finite element modeling, on accelerated test modeling, a physics of failure type activity. And then you go across the country to Cal's and Michael Pecht, he's saying, well, model it, and then you don't even have to do testing.
Well, right? I wouldn't take it that far. I mean, you said you wouldn't need to do testing.
Well, you've seen his papers, right?
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I'm glad you mentioned finite element modeling, because this is actually I was starting my career as a finite element modeler, okay, analyst, actually starting with writing the code. And funny, when FEA just came out and started becoming a major tool, people were saying, oh, I mean, with FEA, you will never have to do any testing ever again.
Yeah, right.
Because you'd be able to model everything. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw how well that worked out. But yeah, FEA tool is extremely important. Find it very valuable. But at the same time, I mentioned that during the panel that oftentimes FEA engineers don't really have a good understanding of reliability, mm-hmm, which is, again, quite surprising. But I've done a couple of seminars internally at Delphi with FEA people, and they themselves said, yeah, we do all this modeling, but actually we don't really understand reliability very well, because right, most of what they do is pretty deterministic.
Well, they also, I mean, what I have found is that the folks doing the modeling can find stress concentrations. They can find areas where you're going to exceed material properties, the electrical circuits where you're overloading the current on a particular device. They can pick up things like that. But where I find they tend to lack is then, well, how does the material change under those loads? If it's not overstressed and taking it to rupture basically or failure, does it harden it? Does it embrittle it? Does it wear it? Those kinds of things. They don't alter the material properties as the material ages. And I always wish they had a switch that say, all right, this polymer is going to do X with this modest amount of temperature, and how does that affect the model or the performance when you simulate 20 years of aging on it?
Yeah, and not only that, it's just even like simple variance of those properties. Mm. Even like if you're not changing the temperature, like you get the Young modulus or density or something else, those properties are not really exact numbers also. So that's in true. Some cases you'd want to kind of run I don't know, a distribution or a couple of scenarios, and those capabilities are there in most of the FEA tools.
Well, it's one of those things though that the topic though strikes me as something that I advocate a lot, and I'm sure you do too, is that if you're going into testing, you're not doing the testing just because you always do it, right? You don't run high temperature over stress test at 85 C for 100 hours just willy-nilly, just because you always do it, or just because it's in a standard. You're doing it so that you can learn something. You know, is the product supposed to work in that environment? And to what degree is it supposed to work? Is it supposed to survive a short duration? Is it not supposed to melt? You start building up from maybe FMEA type activity or risk assessment type activity. Well, what's it supposed to do? And then you check it. The testing is really a check step to, does it perform as expected? And I think setting that expectation allows you to be surprised. You know, we go into halt testing, and I always sit next to the design engineer or one of the developers, and we're cranking up the temperature, and they start, little beads of sweat come out on their forehead. It's like, it's not supposed to work at that temperature. And it's going to fail immediately. And it runs for another 20 degrees, another 2 hours, and they're surprised. So it defeated their expectation. But then something fails, and they're like, well, of course it failed. It's over temperature. And I says, well, let's look at the failure mechanism. You know, this is something that would occur at lower temperatures, just take longer. But it's setting, what is it supposed to do, and then checking it. I don't know how else to do testing.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes you get surprised a good way, but sometimes
that's true.
You get surprised not a very good way when something fails when you fully expect it to work.
That's right. But so. Either way, you learn something. If you just run the test and you dismiss any failures going, well, yeah, whatever, you know, it was the wrong conditions. Well, then you didn't design the test correctly. Or if it passes, well, you know, and I always rail at the test that the component vendors do in electronics, is they'll take 75 units and run it at a modest temperature for a couple hundred hours, and then voila, it's good for 10 years.
Yeah, we passed. Yeah,
yeah, we passed. But, and they're like, so what?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big category of tests where, like, basically you test to pass, and yeah, if you follow certain specifications or standards. I mean, this is a reality. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, we need to run more tests where we learn something about the product. And unfortunately, sometimes in the industry, it's not the mindset. Again, mm-hmm. The mindset is often like, yeah, here's the test. We need to pass it and basically be good for whatever, yeah, 10 years or 15 years.
Well, and that's where I always lose it, though, is what's the connection between those test conditions and what's the translation to 10 years of in-use conditions? And usually I get this blank stare of, well, it always passes. Well, then why are you running the test? You know, what's the point?
This was actually one of the things I mentioned during the panel and in the present my presentation at the conference, that a lot of the industry started being driven by standards, and part of the problem is the companies, and I was speaking mostly about the automotive, they collect far less data than they used to collect, because mm-hmm. I still have those old General Motors reports going back to like mid-80s and very early 90s, where they were collecting a lot of data. For example, yeah, you park your car in the sun somewhere in Arizona, and temperature goes up, so they were taking measurements. Okay, what's the temperature under your seat? What's the temperature in the headliner? What's the temperature under the hood? And all that stuff, which mm-hmm. is very useful, because if your electronics goes there, if you mount your electronics there, which you do, now electronics is everywhere, you know what temperatures to expect.
That's right.
And the thing is, nobody's really doing that anymore.
Hmm. That's too bad.
It's too bad. In all those big automotive companies, they kind of revert to standards, and the numbers in those standards, I mean, sometimes nobody really knows where they came from.
Well, you've been in standards groups, and development of standards is usually one or two people come up with some using their internal data, or they modify it slightly, or use a previous standard that we don't know exactly how they came up with the numbers. And then the consensus of the group may change the numbers. Well, we need 40 degrees C is not high enough for us. We need 45 C. So,
right. Know, it just doesn't look too conservative enough for us. Yeah,
let's change it. And there's no science behind it. There's no data behind it. It's group consensus to a large degree. And if anybody has a big objection, they make their argument. And to keep the standard on track and on target, that's fine. And I would much rather see standards, especially in the testing realm, that explained, or in the environmental world in particular, is, well, where's the distribution of temperatures behind that in different parts of the world? What's the humidity factor on this? And what are the real numbers and the effects on materials? But more importantly is, if you're doing a high temperature humidity test, what does it apply to? Is this applied to electronics components? Does it apply to hardened material? Does it apply to solar panels? They just say, do this test and you're good for 10 years. And, well, that's not true with everything.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said before, the trend of collecting data is kind of the opposite what it should be. And this is pretty ironic, because now we live in the world of big data, so to speak.
Yeah, Internet of Things also generating stuff.
Yeah, you can collect a lot of data, but in those cases, what I was describing, like, yes, you need to do a special type of measurements. Yeah, to mount the sensors on the car, mm-hmm. and kind of collect that data, those data, basically, it's not something built in the car. It's right. Something which takes extra. And in these days, nobody really wants to spend money on that. So I think I see this as a big problem.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Andre, it's not just the auto industry. It's a number of industries. I am seeing more inclusion, though, of operating time type sensors going into equipment. Some of the bigger medical device systems I've worked with are deliberately putting in sensors so they can monitor, not only just collect data on where their systems are being used, but to look for trouble signs, like current sensors that look for a motor that's drawing more current than it should. It might still be working, but it's a signal that something's going wrong. And then they can do some more diagnostics on it. Things like that are starting to occur as the sensors are becoming less and less expensive and easier to implement.
Yeah, and I think that's the hope. Like I said, it's if this is something like if you want to collect the RPMs of an engine, this is something you can collect probably pretty inexpensively, because there's some kind of sensor inside, and you can probably start recording that, mm-hmm. for life of a vehicle. But again, something like if you want to measure temperatures at certain parts of a vehicle where those sensors there's no sensors, then that's part of a problem.
Well, it is, and it goes back to testing. Also, is often one that just infuriated me is I was working with a vendor. And trying to understand their testing. And they took, it was a handheld unit, and they took 20 of these units and they put it in a chamber. And without getting into the specifics, they didn't power it. They didn't even monitor whether it was functional or not during the test. And they pulled it out, let it sit for a couple of days. So it came back totally to room temperature. And if it powered up, it was good. They didn't even run a diagnostic test. The power-up routine was just light up the screen, basically. It really didn't do much of anything. And they were surprised that after a week, those same units all failed. And they attributed it to poor handling after the test. And it was, the temperature exposure alone caused the defect that didn't manifest right away. It took it another week for that corrosion to actually create the failure, but it was 100% failure after a week. But they had no idea what the test was supposed to find or what it was supposed to do to the product in any shape or form. it was a standard based, and they said, oh, it passed. It does test it and we're good. And then they had dismissed that those samples all failed later as being a wave of the hand. All that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
and the whole story is, though, is that they ended up shipping that product, and it was a holiday market type launch, and they shipped, I think, 70,000 units, and 50,000 failed within 2 weeks. Huge disaster on a launch. And it was exactly the issue they ignored.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a mindset, and again, just not to repeat myself, it started worrying me a little bit, actually not a little bit, quite a bit, that there's a lot more standards coming out and people getting so basically hung up on them. And not only standards, like I can give you an example. I have a group in Europe, basically part of our company. And I was trying to set up a series of tests with touch screens and displays, mm-hmm. which is still pretty unstudied technology. I mean, yeah, it's been around for some time, but again,
there's not a lot of papers on it, not a lot of people publishing the results. It's a lot of proprietary work.
And we know they degrade, and we need to basically learn a lot more about them. And I was trying to set up some series of tests at one of our subsidiary in Europe. And I was basically faced with total not understanding what I'm trying to do. It's like, why do we need to do all that when customer really tells us, okay, here's how you test your products. Here's what you do, and here's what you expect. So why do we need to run our own tests and do a design of experiment and run like a several different temperatures and maybe different humidities to understand all that? And it really took some time to explain that we are the experts in the technology and testing, and that car companies, they're car companies. They're not experts in displays or electronics and other things. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand and not wait for them to tell us what to do, because they don't know.
No, they just want it to work. And we don't know the effects of like sun tan lotion on the electronics.
Exactly.
We need to sort those things out. Yeah, very true. Well, yeah, there is a balance between modeling and testing. And we talked a lot about in product development type testing and standards and in any approach. I think it's fundamental that we come up with, well, what are we trying to accomplish? What are we trying to learn? And if you keep that in mind, it makes it harder to go wrong. If there's really no actions going to be taken at the result of your test, well, then don't do the test. If you know, there's some fundamentals, I think, anyway, but we keep working at it. We keep writing about it. We'll keep talking about it, I'm sure, Andre.
Yeah, and not to kind of being the guy who remembers all the time good old times, but when I was starting my career, I would say we were doing a lot more of those experimental type testing, mm-hmm. studying solder joints and new technology, like when CD players were coming out, and yeah, we've done a lot of testing on those and in other technologies at that time, and like I said, a lot less of that is done these days on any level. So.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll keep chipping away at it, and let's ask our listeners. You know, what are you seeing in the world of testing and standards and how you put together your systems, and are you learning something as you go into testing? Are you setting expectations, or are you using modeling? If so, what kind of modeling? So take a look at reliability.fm. It's our podcast network. And you'll find Speaking of Reliability in there. And there's plenty of opportunity to leave us a note or a comment, and we'd love to hear from you. Also, we're not entirely invisible online, so you can feel free to send us an email or find us on LinkedIn or in a discussion group somewhere. And let us know what you think. How does it working in your organization, and what kind of balance are you finding is working between modeling and setting expectations in the testing and test results and interpretation that you're actually achieving? I'm also curious, is it working? Are you being surprised by how your customers destroy your product versus what you saw in the lab? Those kinds of things, which is, I think, the ultimate test for us is what customers do with our products. So with that, Andre, let's wrap it up for today. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, well, thanks for doing this and inviting me.
All right. Thanks, Andre.
Okay, have a good day.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.